arrive and ring back in while your party is reached.
Hello.
Hey, Mindy, it's Ed Till. We're live on Starcom Radio Network. How are you today?
Hello, Ed. I'm lovely. How are you, dear?
I'm good. You know, I'm trying to really get a handle on this. I've been reading about you for a little while now. So start slow with me.
It's hard. You know, how do you describe something, Ed, that is so undescribable? But
yeah,
I'll try.
I was just going to say, that's our challenge, right? That's our challenge, because it is something you get. I think when you first hear it, you're like, yeah, there could be something here in how horses behave, teaching us, giving us cues on behavior. So I want to direct people to the resonanthorse.com as we speak.
Absolutely.
Go right ahead.
Absolutely. And Ed, you did a really good job. So, okay, we know how these animals have affected our lives for centuries. You know, in the early years, they were indispensable to survival. Well, they're not like that anymore. We don't need them for their physical strength. Right now, what we're finding is they aid us in living our lives the best we can live. And whether you're somebody with post-traumatic stress, whether you're a child on the spectrum, whether you're a mother that's trying to really discern what she wants to do when she grows up, whether you're an executive, the wisdom of the horse can speak to all of us, all of that. And you wonder, well, how can that be? How can it be across the board? So let me give you a little snippet of how they live. And then, you know, whatever questions you have about that, I'd love to engage them.
Sure.
So here's how horses live. And I'm really, Ed, we're simplifying, okay? So what I'm going to talk about, we can certainly go much deeper on each one of these things. But here's how a horse lives. They get fuel. They have food. They ingest food. They ingest the proper amount of food. They see that food is fuel, okay? So for us, is food fuel? Sometimes not. Sometimes yes. Sometimes we have a lot more attachment to food emotionally. So that's a piece you can certainly explore. The next thing the horses do when they live their lives is they have movement. So they move during their days. They have certain cycles. And I'm not talking, by the way, I'm not talking about, you know, Mustangs on the prairie. I'm talking about domesticated horses that have a routine, that have said yes to having a relationship and a connection with people, with humans.
Right.
So I'm not talking about, you know, the extremes, the extreme examples. We're not talking that.
Right.
So they have movement during the day. They move, they might stop moving. You know, are we using movement to maintain our health in a way that's really important? Horses linger. This is my favorite one.
Hmm.
You know, whether you're an executive, whether you're a mom, whether you're a child on the spectrum, what do we do in our lives today that causes us to linger? And so really, when you think about it, what is linger? It's pausing in our days. Our pace, you know what the pace is like for people. Look at your show. Look at how beautiful and fast-paced your show is, because that's what keeps people engaged, right?
Right, right.
Exactly. But to slow down so you can stop and notice things is a wonderful thing to do in this day and age. And then the last thing that horses do, and so that linger piece, you know, you've got the mindfulness meditation piece, you have the being present and noticing, you can see how you could really, you know, elaborate on that.
Right.
And then you have the last thing that horses do is they rest. When they're tired, they rest. How many of us in our days do we even know how to rest? And when we do rest, are we really able to really refuel and restore so that we can repeat this cycle? So that's like a snippet of how they live. And I'm so thrilled and honored and privileged. I have people that come to me literally from all over the world, and in an environment that's very safe and very sacred, we partner with the horses. So a lot of the work, when the people come to me, my clients, there's nothing mounted. So you're not riding. Riding is a whole other thing that we could talk about, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about partnering with horses that allow us to change our lives. They change our lives. They change our neurons. They change our heart rates. Horses have something that's called a coherent heart rhythm. Mm. And what that means is when we're in their presence, because their energy field is so huge, we actually can experience feelings of satiation and well-being. Our heart rate can lower. Mm-hmm. Our blood pressure can lower.
Right.
This is why horses can change our brains and our minds and our bodies. And the thing about horses is they're very present. They're very present in their mind. They're present in their body. And their heart is oftentimes very open and curious, which, by the way, Ed, I think that's a nice way to live, isn't it?
It is. Well, you know, the first thing I was going to say that occurred to me was I wish somebody would, you know, own me, put me in a barn on no schedule all day. I walk when I want. I linger when I want. I eat. What I'm trying to do is how do I draw the parallel to the human? When we want to we want to use the horse as a template.
Yeah.
Let's draw lines into, you know, whether it's the guy, the husband, the father, the workaday dude, the mom who's, you know, maybe a CEO and a mom at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
Where do the similarities manifest that are most spot on point?
Okay, so you're asking me, I mean, you are not fair, Ed. You're asking me to make a huge generalization. But you know what? With what works with everybody. But I'm up to the task because the horses can do that. So now I want to say one thing before I answer that, though. So keep in mind that everybody that comes or people that call me, because I also coach people, not everybody can come to this lovely property outside Philadelphia. Mm. But they can call me. I mean, I'm talking to you. So when somebody calls or when somebody comes, basically, you just explore where they are at. Because the horses are always authentic and congruent, okay? Mm. So they're kind of the foundation.
Right.
And then when the people come, everybody, just like who you described, the executive, the mom that's also a CEO, oh my God, how challenging. People come and they present with their lives. And here's the deal. Now, I know, you know, when you have a hammer, you know the saying, everything looks like a nail. But one of the reasons why horses are so incredibly effective, really across all demographics, Ed, is because their state, their isness, if I can say that, I don't know, that's really a word, but is always, usually, open, curious, and non-judgmental.
Mm.
And they're very present in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take our CEO. Let's take our mom that's also a CEO. What about a child on the spectrum? What about a child from the inner city that only knows to react when they hear, you know, loud noises? To bring them into this place of stillness and quiet and aid them in two things. Now, I'm talking about a child from the inner city, but you can apply this to anybody. Two things: to encourage them to be present to their discomfort. Oh my, how huge is that? And number two, to not react. There's a great quote, Viktor Frankl: in between the stimulus and response is a pause, and in that pause is your freedom and your power. We partner with the horses to try to slow ourselves down.
So are they on that pace? In other words, startle
Here's
them.
The deal. Here's the deal with the horses.
Yeah.
They're so, everything with them is in the real time. So you're asking me, well, what do you mean, Vindy? Are horses always calm and they don't react? No, that's not what I'm saying at all. What I'm saying is horses are large animals, they're prey animals, and they're non-predatory. So what that means is they use their energy and their power in non-predatory ways. Because when a lion, you know, in days of old, when a lion would be off in the bush, the horse couldn't, you know, lift his foot and point and say, oh my gosh, there's a lion there. But what they did is they silently would use nonverbal intuition. They say that 80% of our learning is nonverbal. And horses are masters of that. And when we're around that, that those tools, the intuition, the nonverbals, we can exercise that. It's almost like it's a muscle, so to speak. And so how do we do that? We watch the horses. So, for example, one of the things I do for my workshops, I guess I'm going to give it away, is I introduce a horse into an established herd. Very simple. The people are not in any danger. The horse is really not in any danger because these animals have years together. But what you do when you introduce a horse into a herd, similar to, you know, an employee having working with a new CEO or a mom integrating other children into a family, change happens. And when you watch these horses, their energy is always they notice, they feel, they respond or they react appropriately, I might add, usually, and then they go back to a state of satiation. So when this horse gets introduced to the herd, whoever's the alpha, you were talking about alphas with your previous caller, the hypnotist.
Right.
You know, whoever's the alpha is the top dog, right? We know
right.
that.
Right.
And when you see the horse getting introduced, you can, by noticing, it's all about noticing. It's all nonverbal. You look at the horse's eye. You look at their ear, how they're twitching it. Let me ask you something. Do you ever go shopping? Do you ever go food shopping?
Yeah, too much.
Do you ever?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. Have you ever walked down an aisle with your shopping cart and walked by somebody and felt something really uncomfortable?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
No words. Have you ever walked down another aisle while you were shopping and passed somebody and thought, wow, it'd be kind of cool to meet? That's the nonverbal that I'm talking about. That is our heart to somebody else's heart. And the thing with horses is they're so large and powerful, but they're so kind. And when we're in their presence, we can, those traits, we can integrate those traits into our lives so that when we leave and go into our very hectic life that you described it with so many people, we have some tools. We have concrete tools. It is so amazing, Ed, that I get to show up and partner with these horses and see people's lives changed. I had one young woman that came out. She just came out a couple weeks ago, and she was with this animal for 30 minutes, and she went back home, and her mother said, Mindy, I don't know what happened, but she's calmer, she's more present, she's happy, she's loving me more. And I think it's, you know, when we're around 1,250 pounds and you're brushing it and you're in relationship, you're connecting. We so desperately need to connect in today's world.
Right.
And horses let us do it. And then when you leave, Lord God willing, you have some of that openness with you. I was a person that I thought I lived my life with a pretty open lens. And you know what, Ed? I didn't. For me, it took tremendous suffering. I had to go through a very painful period in my life, a divorce after a long-term marriage. And out of that suffering, that's what woke me up. Because grief can really alter one's ego.
Right.
And you know what? Is it okay if I dovetail to your previous caller? Is that okay?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, great. So I couldn't help but listen as you were talking about the alpha CEOs and how they can change, you know,
right.
these very strong, powerful personalities. You know, the buzzword today is narcissist. And I thought, from my understanding of watching horses live and in my own life, it is suffering that can change that. Because suffering either allow it to transform you. Okay, this is my personal bias. You either allow it to transform you or you're going to transmit it to everybody around you. And the horses were able to show me how to live, how to linger, how to rest, how to be with discomfort. I don't know about you, but I don't like to be uncomfortable, Ed. I don't know.
Right. But now you're on one of my pet peeves about America. America seems to always not want to be bothered. And I do think it's kind of a fool's errand. I think we need, you know, stress. I think we need negativity. I don't think it's good to smooth everything all out there, because the day you're going to be called to either defend yourself or something else, you know, you're right. just not going to be on your toes. You're really going to unlearn how to defend. And I worry about a consumerist constant demand. Make it easy. Make me happy. Give me what I want. I do worry about that. But I really want to get back to the horse for a second. They seem to have arrived somewhere where humans are unfamiliar. So what is
that? Well, but I think what you just said, you're so good. You're saying it. It's not like horses live without stress. And by the way, I actually agree with what you just said. Totally. I hope I'm not coming across like I have some kind of a candy-coated solution. I have had way too much suffering in my life to even talk so tritely of such things. What I'm saying is that we need tools to be with our discomfort, not to necessarily make it go away.
Oh, good.
But to be present to it in a way that doesn't consume us, that doesn't raise our heart rate, that doesn't raise our blood pressure. We have how many millions of us are living our lives in the fight or flight state 100% of the time? And here's getting back to the horse. You're really helping me to hit on these things that I really wanted to talk about.
Good.
Horses know what a fight or flight state looks like. Let's go back to that lion in the bush. Now, we don't have lions in the bush anymore, but when we did, when you had a stimulus, which was the lion,
right.
What horses would do is they would focus on it. They would narrow their gaze. They would go from a wide-angle lens of living to a narrow focus, hyper-focus, if you will, on that object. Because they had to know, in an instant, do we tell our other herdmates to flee? And then they would respond. They would flee or not if it wasn't a threat. And then, guess what, Ed? Mm. Going back to the horse,
right.
This is what they would do that we desperately need to do. They would return to their state of satiation. They would return to that open, curious, wide-angle living. That's why when we are connected with them, we can live the same way. When I offer workshops. I do workshops every month, and we actually have an exercise. And sometimes I've done this when I've gone out to speak, where I can actually take an audience from a closed mind to open and curious in an instant. It's pretty cool.
Wow, that is. If you're just joining us, I want you to know who you're listening to. You are enjoying the wisdom of our guest, Mindy Chernoff, CEO of The Resonant Horse and also author of the upcoming book, From Muck to Magnificence, How Mucking... That's great. It's great because, I just want to get the title out there. Then we can talk about it a little. How Mucking Shall Lead to an Astonishing Life. Wow.
There you go.
Help me out with that. Here's the thing, right? Help me out here. The horse doesn't know about ISIS. The horse doesn't know Trump. The horse doesn't know the taxes are due. The horse doesn't know my 17-year-old's in jail. God knows what they did at the frat house. So the horse has what? Their own version of thinking and stressful thinking?
Well, I think we already talked about that. The horses live their lives with an open and curious gaze, a wide-angle lens. They can see almost all around them except for directly behind them. And that's how they live, unless it's compromised. So their lion in the bush, Ed, is absolutely no different than who you just described. The person under stress, the person who has a child in jail, the mother who is suffering desperately because their child is on drugs.
What does
deal.
So what's the horse's version of worry?
The horse's
what does a horse worry about? What does a horse get anxious? What causes anxiety? But I don't mean like in the moment. I don't mean in the moment. I mean like a human, where you've got things on the back of your mind.
Well, here's the deal, honey. You're asking something, but physiologically, Ed, it's no different. So the horse might be, maybe you have an alpha that wants to get fed first, and he's upset he's not getting fed first. That might create some angst in him. That's no different, Ed, than us driving our cars and wanting to be in front or in the next lane. The physiological experience is the same. Our heart rate rises, our blood pressure rises, stress hormones flow through our system. Mm. So it doesn't, like, you're looking for something really definitive with the horses, and I keep saying, it's us. We are them, they are us. They're mirrors of us. So when somebody comes out to my farm,
right,
and let's say they have a lot of anxiety, mm-hmm, okay,
right,
The horse will mirror that. The horse will get maybe a little antsy, maybe dance around, won't be as calm or quiet. These are things that I notice. And when I talk to my clients, it's not in a, this is what I noticed, this is what you're doing wrong. Oh my gosh, that is like the worst thing to say. It's really more like, wow, you see how he's moving around? How is that making you feel? What do you think could be going on? Just think for a moment how novel it is to get yourself out of the way enough to think about what could be going on with this 1,250-pound animal. I had a woman that came out, and the horse was standing in the aisle with cross ties, and those are lines on either side of the horse, so the horse stands very still. And I said to her, just walk around him. And she walked around the first part, and I said, and as you walked around this side, I want you to focus on what you think the horse might be feeling. And she did that. And then she passed the horse, you know, a very safe distance, came off to the other side, and I said, came up to the other side, and said, now I want you to focus on what you're feeling. And the horse never moved, Ed, okay? Mm. And this was an exercise that this woman, she had had some previous fear of horses, and it took a lot of courage for her to do this. And after the exercise was over, she was like, it was so profound because, like, at first I realized, like, the first half, I realized he's so strong, but he's so quiet. Like, his gentleness.
But isn't it, but I have to ask, isn't it because he can't think like us? And how?
Oh, my God. 99... Yes. And, all right. Now you're going to get me. Here, you
good.
Know
I
want
to get
that?
You because I don't. Here's what I have to say. I mean, I want to be clear so the audience knows
know.
Too. Right. How
you
can a
know.
Horse. How could a
Listen
horse.
Listen to me. Listen to me. You want to know the dumbest thing about a horse?
No, I'm looking for the most complex thing that I would bother to pay attention to them because I would have to believe they're as complex as the person we're trying to help. That's my question. What? Yeah.
The only problem with a horse not being complex, Ed.
Yes.
Is who is on the other end of the lead rope.
I'm a little lost. I'm at a loss from that answer. I don't understand how that helps me. But go ahead, help me. Help me understand.
Well, because if your attitude is already one of this animal can't offer me anything. You are already so closed. How is that going to get in, Ed?
Well, somebody would have to tell
you
me what they would have to
have
say.
To be,
oh, okay. So I have go to ahead. Go first? I don't want to go first. I would want to know.
You have no. You're not going first. You're willing. You're just willing to be open. And by the way, if that's something that's difficult for you, that speaks a lot about you even before we interact with the horse.
Interesting. Interesting. All right.
Okay.
Right.
But the difference with the horses
right.
is no matter who you are, Ed, and what you bring and what you believe and what you don't believe, they are willing to be open and curious as long as you can be. Now, if you come and you have that closed heart and horses are stupid and they can't teach me anything.
Well, now, see what's going on now? You heard yourself. You didn't hear me say stupid. But you heard what I said. You heard my words, and you spun it
right.
to stupid, which is, I understand you're defensively protecting these animals that you love. But I'm saying, for somebody to believe in the theory, how could a horse be a good guide for a highly intelligent human who can have literally 200 conversations going on in their head? You know, the kids, the job, the car, this, that. What is comparable in the horse that is also multi-layered and, you know, and numerous that they're solving their group of stuff and now I might be able to solve my group of stuff from how they're handling it? Where's the equivalence of what we're under in terms of pressure? That's what I'm looking for.
The equivalent is, for one thing, horses are masters of the intuitive and the nonverbal. So let's take somebody who's very smart. Let's take an exec. Let's take a CEO. Why are they flocking to equine-facilitated leadership? Because with all due respect, Ed, they know that they are missing the boat.
But what is it? But what is it that they know? In other words, what's the knowledge? What's the set of facts? Let me have the set of facts.
Let me use an executive as an example.
Right.
To be a truly effective executive for today, somebody who's bright, crazy bright, off the charts, okay, they need to not only have those tools to lead, but what they're finding in today's world, Annie McKee, Resonant Leadership, is the most effective executives are leading with tools of compassion, mindfulness, and hope. And those are tools that are sorely needed in our workplace and amongst our executives today. Horses are masters of teaching that in a brilliant way. Brilliant way. And I know that. How do I know that? Because I have had one of the top executive training programs in the world. In other words, their staff came out and did a workshop.
Right.
And the learnings that they have are still with them today. That's how I know that horses can transform and empower and change. Whether you're an executive, whether you're very, very bright, or whether you're a child from the inner city.
Right, but let me make the question specific, right? A human can have 65 conflicts in their head. Can a horse?
Well, you know, I'm not a vet, and I'm not a neuroscientist, but just give me a minute to think about that.
In other words, I want to paint the picture of a crowded mind. Can a horse have a crowded mind and then sort it out healthfully so that I could look at them and say...
They would sort it out differently than you and I might, because, again, it's the nonverbal piece. When a horse is in distress,
right,
i.e. has many things going on at one time,
right,
they are going to do what they were created to do, to go back to a state of satiation. And the way they do that is whatever it is that's creating the stress response.
Right.
In other words, the stress response for them, whether it's 65 things we have going on in our mind, don't forget that physiologically that's affecting our body the same way, right?
Absolutely.
The blood pressure rises, all that stuff,
right,
the anxiety. They will want to go back to a state of satiation. They will want to go back to that open and curious, non-judgmental. They have to feel safe, Ed. They have to feel safe. If we want to stop those 65 different things, we have to slow down, we have to notice, we have to be willing to maybe stop to look at some of these 65 things, which again brings me back to the discomfort, which is hard to do, I think.
Well, I mean, you know, the thing is, though, to be realistic, a typical involved adult human won't be able to put anything aside. They're all obligations. The trick is get them done. Get through them.
Say more about that.
You know, you got your job responsibilities and you got a meeting at 7 a.m. You need sleep or you don't need sleep. You got to finish the report. There's no standing back and seeing how you feel. There's beat the clock and get your task done. And what I hear in the description of the horse, I don't feel the horse is under any pressure at all. So I don't know how.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something. When that one horse got introduced to the herd,
yes,
there was pressure.
But that's one thing. That's one thing. That's one thing. But that's one thing. What if you got that plus 64 more? That's what I'm looking for the comparison to be. You have a complex human, and they're looking for a way to approach the enormity of the stress that they have, right?
The way the complex human is going to be able to access their stress is no different than a horse, whether there's multiple stresses or not. And the way is...
How do you figure that, though? That's what I'm saying. I mean, how do you talk past that? A guy or a gal, they have a list.
Stop moving.
Can a horse have a list? Can a horse have a list? Wednesday I do this. Thursday I better be ready for that. Next Tuesday I have to go all the way across town. Go ahead, tell me.
They certainly have a routine.
No, not a routine. I'm asking about a pile of problems that they would be able to know that they have the human experience of the pressure, of the, it must be, you know, these tasks must be completed at a certain level. It's not just good enough to go to work and do your job. You have to do it successfully or we have a problem. So that's where I'm looking for, like, when the horse is burdened, it's burdened one item at a time, right?
Yes, but they can add up and amass. In other words, I had a horse today that I brought into the aisle, and he's a new horse. He's actually being quarantined, so he's away from all my other horses. Mm-hmm. So I moved him from one spot to another where he was able to see horses, and now he's not. And so he was very under a lot of stress. I added to that stress because I started to brush him. He was even more stressful. I added to that stress because I put a saddle on him. Mm. He was almost off the charts.
Mm.
Okay. He was not, I would not have wanted anybody to have been there while this was going on. He was under so much stress that had built and was ready to explode. Mm. And when you have 1,250 pounds that's ready to explode, you sure better have some tools.
Yeah.
And by the way, I know, you know, maybe I'm not connecting here with you, but I want you to get this if you can. Those tools that I did with that horse is no different than that person that is under so much stress at work and has to succeed. And it has to do with being present, slowing down, being non-judgmental, and being able to be open and curious.
Right.
And your intention. I can't, because what you're talking to me, my son's getting married in 3 days. How exciting is that? He is under so much stress. Like, there's so much to do. It's off the charts every single day, every moment. And I said to him today, just can you tell me two things that are really great that happened already? You know, it's our intention. Sometimes, look, we all know people that have really difficult lives. And we know people that also have difficult lives that seem to have some kind of tools to handle that. All I'm saying is, in our world today that's so challenging and difficult, these animals can give us the tools. And they're the tools to slow down. They're the tools to be present. You have these people on your show all the time, Ed. And I think, if I can be so bold, possibly the reason you do is because you know there's something out there. You know, there's something there that works.
Interesting. Well, you know, I'm definitely open to the possibility. What do you think makes horses different than, say, kittens? You want to make somebody calm down? Give them a kitten.
No.
Put a kitten in their
lap.
Well,
no, you
have
know,
a puppy.
You
have
know.
A puppy start licking them, and before you know it, they'll calm down. Now, I've seen this work, but I'm just saying, what makes the horse different than other animals? Being
okay,
close to,
so let's talk about two things. I'll talk about the horse. Let me talk about what you're describing are simply mirror neurons, Ed. You know, we have things in our brain that connects to others in their brain. That's the simplest way of saying it. When you pet a dog, you're releasing endorphins in you and the dog. When you pet a kitten, it's no different. These learnings with how animals can change us is across the board. The difference?
Mm-hmm.
Is 1,250 pounds. So let's say you have a teenager, and I have several of them, whose parents know that no matter how much these kids are doing, the most important part of their week is to be out here. Why is that? Because they're learning how to connect with something outside themselves. They're learning to care for something, to tend for something that's outside themselves that is very large. And they're able to do it in a way that gives them strength and courage. When you move around 1,250 pounds, I'm not talking in an abusive way. I'm talking to move and be in relationship with.
Yeah.
That's pretty empowering, Ed. And for a teenage girl in this day and age, I don't need to say more about that, how valuable that is. These are tools that these girls have for life. How do I know that? I know that because I've been teaching for over 20 years. I've been offering workshops for close to that amount of time, and I have generations of kids. My kids are now my students, I call them my kids. My students are all having kids of their own. and they will call me and they'll say, oh, I just drove by this stable and I remember what it was like for us, and I just drove by this auction. I mean, these are their lives today. It's such an honor for me. Mm. Their lives today are still transformed because of what the wisdom of the horse has taught them. And I love that, Ed. I mean, I'm so privileged.
Is it a placebo effect? In other words, you're led to believe this is really going to calm you down, and you kind of buy in, and it calms you down.
You are a placebo effect.
Yeah.
So you're saying,
right, there's nothing that they're doing that
then,
right, that the
you
horses aren't
this is going to be.
You got it. The horses aren't doing a doggone thing. They're being themselves. But
since
you believe,
Ed, my dear, I have over 55 years experience with horses, and I don't even know how to answer that, honey. Here's the deal. If that's how you feel,
what if that were true? What would you feel if that were true? What if you found out it was placebo effect, suggestion? And there's really nothing happening there.
Then my 55 years was for naught.
Well, maybe not. I mean, couldn't that be built on? I mean, it doesn't have to be only one way. In other words, they could have this effect on people. But what I was going for before was what's really happening inside of them when, they're the most stressed out? Because that's what I would look for. If I was looking for, a connection, I would try to understand, they do have all of these worries simultaneously. Or when you use the word satiation, right? When they're going back to that.
Yes.
Elaborate on that a little bit. Does that mean...
Oh, great question. A state of satiation is one where your heart and your mind and your body is all connected. You are congruent. You're authentic. In horses, it's very noticeable. By a lot of times, they will lick their lips, or they will kind of drop their head, and they will kind of linger. Maybe they'll rest a foot. There are ways that you can see how horses are satiated. And here's the deal, Ed. There's a piece here you're missing, and I'm not. I'm not here to try to get you to see it, but I want to explain something. When people come to me and they are dealing with what I would call very predatory people in their lives, okay? Bosses that are abusive, family members that are very challenging. I don't need to show them the predatory power of horses because they live with that in their heart. What I do need to do is aid them in slowing down, noticing, being present in a non-judgmental way, to open their heart and then to see how the horse responds to them. That is a beautiful thing, Ed. And, I think we're coming back to the beginning, which is sometimes there's things in our lives that are so profound and so deep that you almost don't have words for them. That's the place in the space that when you're able to be really present and see how those horses respond to you with a heart that's open, it is the best part of your day. And it brings you, interestingly enough, often to a place of stillness and silence. And I've seen it time and time again, whether you're talking executives or nine-year-olds.
Right. Now, the upcoming book is From Muck to Magnificence, How Mucking Stalls Leads to an Astonishing Life. What made you start to write this?
What the heck is that about, is what you're really saying.
Well, first I want to know why'd you bother writing it. Then you can tell me what it's about. Why did you want to write it?
Because it wrote me. It came out of me. I was in a very deep period of profound suffering, and I had to get up and do the same thing over and over again. So I had routines, and one of them was cleaning stalls. And as I was doing this, I'm really strong on using right where we're at to inspire us, to give us an invitation to a greater learning.
Mm.
So whether you're mucking stalls or whether you're, a CEO of a corporation, my intention and my desire is to really see what's deeper, where's the invitation for greater growth. And I realized as I was cleaning these stalls that it was a metaphor for life. So, I'll do this real quick. So Mucking stalls, it involves you have to pick. You have to choose. Obviously, you're going to leave the good bedding in there and get rid of the bad bedding. So right there, we can dovetail off of that about what choices do you make. Are you making positive choices, negative choices? Lift, you have to lift. You can't just pick. It'll stay on the ground. You have to lift it. You have to find something higher to attain to, okay? Mm-hmm. You have to, whether work on your spiritual tools, whatever that may be, maybe that's prayer, maybe that's attending studies, maybe that's whatever, meditation. You have to have something, Ed, that's going to take you out of your life so you can be fully present with it, if that makes sense.
In other words, by cleaning the stall of the horse, the act of doing it, it gives you that space to see what's going on.
It's a metaphor. Yes. Yes. For me, like, I'm not expecting people to knock on the door of stables and say, I want to muck your stalls. But I am saying that these principles are principles that work across the board.
Got it.
So you pick, you lift, you sift. You have to sift. Not everything that comes at us is healthy for us. You have to have a really important word, Ed, which is called discernment. And then you have to let go. Put it in the wheelbarrow.
Right. This was actually the kind of thing I was asking you about the horses. The horses can discern. You think the horses can put seven choices in
Absolutely.
Their head and go knock out
horses
the first two?
Discern the intention of people's hearts. Absolutely.
Got it.
And I'll tell you that because I see how they respond.
Sure. Now,
absolutely.
You mentioned a point earlier I want to come back to. So it's starting to sink in here. They're not predatory, meaning they don't kill other animals to eat.
Right. So they don't have big claws and big teeth.
Right.
Those are predators.
Got it. So
what?
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go on.
Well, I just wanted to see if I'm trying to figure out what it means. If they're a non-predatory animal...
Right.
That's giving them the other qualities you described before? I mean, you have to be a non-predator to have this.
Love this question. Love this question. What it does, they're not predators. So they have to find a different way of being in the world that allows them, they've evolved with this knowledge, that allows them to survive. So they're surrounded by a bunch of narcissists, which is kind of my definition of predatory power, if I can be so bold. And they have found a way to survive and thrive in the midst of that.
Got it. Now
I want to learn from that.
Right. Now
I want to know how to do that.
Right. Now we're a capitalist society that makes winners and losers. And you're talking to somebody that hates T-ball. So I don't want kids to think they're winners when they lose. Certainly don't want employees to feel rewarded with a bonus when their work sucks. So if that's predatory, that's tough. Because in order to make it in America, you have to be a little bit of a predator, don't you?
You know, Ed, I want to say yes to you. I want to say unequivocally 100% yes. But here's the deal, Ed.
Tell me.
I have too many of those people, of those leaders, of those executives that come to me and they say, I'm miserable, I'm burnt out, I want to give up, I hate what I do.
Now, do you tell them, take a pacifier, put it in your mouth, you big baby, and go back in the other room and work? You never say that.
Am I going to answer that?
You would never say that. But if I say that, you think I'm wrong? That when people are so upset that we're supposed to do something about it or say, dude, relax. It's okay you're upset. It's okay to hate your job. It's okay to be down on yourself. Get a good night's sleep. Go back at it. Don't waste time thinking about why you feel the way you do. Get something done. Well, that would be that'd be horrible. That's horrible.
And it's a little harsh.
But isn't this what is required? Right. Isn't that required? Like... That's the thing.
What I think is required is...
Tell me.
...is to be present to everything that's unfolding. If you're at work and you're hating it, and you continue to do something that you hate over and over again...
Right.
...you're gonna have a terrible life. I am saying that you make choices that you not mamby-pamby these things away. And I'm also, by the way, I'm also not saying buckle up and be strong, because that's also very unhealthy. And we're finding that.
I'm glad you mentioned that.
And I know you know that, because those of you have some of those people on your show.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's what I say. Buckle up and shut up. Stop talking.
Dad, I did that for years.
Right. Now, why is...
I'm telling you, it gets old and you get miserable and your heart gets closed.
What if I said to you...
Nobody wants to be around you.
Right. Now, what if I said to you, the weak people fall into that category? The strong... The strong...
What is your definition of weak, Ed?
What you just said, I can't go on, this is terrible, I hate my job, I don't know what to do, that to me...
That person is weak to you.
Say again?
That person would be weak to you.
If their objective is, remove my pain, yes, that's weak. That's absolutely... Okay. That's a loser. That's in my neighborhood.
We call those people losers.
Right.
I'm not interested in removing pain. What I am interested in is being with it enough,
yes,
to allow it to transform us, so that you don't have to continue to hate what you're doing and hate your job. Because my guess, if you hate what you're doing, Ed, and you hate your job, I'm thinking you might hate yourself as well. And that has to change. You have to find something in your life.
But what if you told them they got to
open the door?
You got to persevere. But what if you told them you got to persevere? You can't start screaming because it hurts.
But I'm listening.
Persevere. Persevere.
Ed,
suck it up. You know, they used to tell us.
Your heart.
They used to tell us, suck it up. Suck it up. Suck it up. Don't start crying. Suck it up.
You know, Ed.
Yeah, go ahead.
Come out with 1,250 pounds, and we'll see how that works with them. Because that's not.
Well, they don't have our challenges. They don't have our challenges. They got the challenge about the going to the herd.
They have different challenges that used to depend. Their life was dependent on it. Oh, boy, you are a hoot and a half. I love this.
I'm telling you, I love this subject. You better come back on the show when that new book comes out.
Oh, absolutely, honey. I love your questions. Were great. And, you know, I hope it stirred something up within you to want more, and I love that.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I'm a lifelong student. I believe I'm 60 years old. I've been this way since I was 5. I very rarely believe what anybody tells me. I think the human race, by definition, is dishonest and self-serving and lazy. And I think if you don't know that going in, you know, you could get caught up in a lot of stuff that winds up getting us nowhere.
So can I ask you a question?
Please.
Can I ask you a question? Do you feel, Ed, that you live your life with an openness and a curiosity, that your heart is open?
I do, of course.
Okay. Well, of course, that's a big thing.
Yeah. Well, see,
that's
I'm old school. We just don't go for wah, wah, wah.
Yeah.
When people start telling you their troubles, you know,
you got
a loser in the room. You know you're talking to a loser. You know you're talking to a loser. Hey, how you doing? My neck is killing me. The car, my wife, my job. I don't even know what I'm doing with my life. And I'm like, see ya. That's it. Right there, buddy. See ya.
I would hope that our conversation, that's not what you think I'm saying.
No, I think, look, here's my concern. My only concern is when people say, and this is a great example with the horses, that there is something there that may not be apparent to everyone. But once it's pointed out to people, they go, wow, I never thought to look at the horse for this and look at the horse for that. I'm the guy in the room who says, careful. Careful if this is really there or you want it to be there. Be careful.
What I hear is you're saying, I'll be open, but not really. And let me tell you something, that's half-assed. I mean,
well, listen, open means you got to prove it. You can't just tell me the sky is blue.
Ed,
if you can't prove it, if people can't prove what they say, what good is what they say? What good is what they say? If they can't prove it, especially in areas of, you know, what we're talking about here, getting people together and giving them coping skills. If we don't know with certainty, what good is listening?
You know, Ed, I appreciate you, and I think you're great at what you do, but I have to tell you something.
Yes.
If I was in this because I had to prove something, oh, my God, just shoot me now.
Well, there you go. I got it.
Stop me.
Right.
That would stop me
right.
from the incredible gift of partnering with these horses. I get to show up, do a couple little things, and then you know what I get to do, Ed? I get to get out of the way.
Right.
And that, to me, is a beautiful thing.
Well, you know,
that's what an open heart looks like.
Honestly, that can work for some people. But when you're a leader, you really can't get out of the way. They're all depending on you to do the right thing.
There's a few things that can help you get out of the way. One is suffering. Suffering is the grief. Richard Rohr, this wonderful Franciscan father, says right. that grief is the only emotion that has the potential to alter the male psyche.
Mm.
So there's grief, and putting yourself in a relationship with an animal like this and watching things unfold. And I can tell you, I know how this works, because you can't do better than the executive training program that I had. They teach people all over the world, and they came here.
Right.
And the transformation that I saw, it works across the board. Whether you're a narcissistic leader, as long as you can be a little bit open, which is hard. Because let me tell you something. You know what horses do when they're around narcissism?
Tell me.
You know what they do? They shut down.
So they don't have any compassion? So they have no compassion for the narcissist?
No.
Where's their open heart? Where's their open heart for that poor, suffering narcissist?
The predatory power is speaking so loud.
Right.
They can't hear anything else.
I hear you. Now,
you are a hoot. I have loved this.
Oh, good. Well, like I said, we'll have to have you come back when the book comes out. I look forward to talking with you again. I really do.
Thank you, honey.
Mindy.
It was great.
Mindy, thank you. So you're in Philly, in the Philly area.
I am outside of Philly. Steer them, theresonanthorse.com. I just gave a wonderful TEDx talk. You can check that out. And I'm available for,
for further
workshops, retreats,
and for further commentary on the Ed Till Show.
Oh, you're the best. Thanks, Ed.
You got it. Take care, Mindy. Mindy.
Hi, sweetie.
You got it. Have a nice evening.
What's up, Ed?
Hey, man.
Hi. I listen to Ed Till.
What?
I listen to Ed Till.
Hey. I'm Ed Till.
Ed, my man, what's going on?
Hi.
It is the Ed Till Show, Starcom Radio Network, The Resonant Horse. Mindy Chernoff, what a great guest, huh? She's durable, I'll tell you that. You can ask her a ton of questions, and she keeps giving you answers. Love it. Ed Till, Starcom Radio Network.
I left the ports up in New Jersey.